All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Today is September 9th, 2025. And I hope you guys want downward revisions because that's what you're getting today. At least that's what the market is expecting. At 10 a.m. Eastern time this morning, just a little over an hour from now, we will get the annual benchmark revisions to the Bureau of Labor Statistics non-farm payrolls reports, sometimes referred to as the Current Employment Situation Survey. What wonderful government statistical word salad they have there. They're going to change the previously reported job numbers. We don't know how much, but it's going to be a lot. It's going to be a big one. Second year in a row of a big one. The market is expecting somewhere around 800,000 downward revisions to prior months. Now, it's important to keep in mind the time frame here. This is data from March of 2024 to March of 2025. So this has nothing to do with the big downward revisions that we saw last month to those jobs numbers or how, you know, in the August non-farm payrolls, we had 21,000 of downward revisions, completely offsetting the 22,000 jobs gained. This is on top of those downward revisions. And it's just another case of the labor market. You know, let's be honest, guys. They've just been gaslighting the hell out of us for years. I honestly think since 2022, the economy has been in a recession, a deep, severe recession. The only reason the statistics don't agree with that assessment is because of runaway capital incineration in data center construction and runaway government deficit spending, keeping GDP numbers inflated. If you take those away, you're left with an economy that matches your lived experience that says the job market sucks. People who lose their jobs can't find another one. And although the pace of layoffs maybe isn't that severe, if you are unlucky enough to lose your job, you are SOL. There's just nothing out there. And you apply for jobs. I'm seeing anecdotes like this all over Twitter, all over my emails and messages I get in Patreon. People are saying they're applying for jobs left and right. They hear nothing. Even if they do hear something and they actually get an application, sometimes people are being interviewed by freaking chatbots. Like, that's not an impersonal insult. And I'll be honest with you, I don't care how tight the job market is. If I'm applying for a job and you interview me and you don't send a human being to interview me, you send your freaking large language model, your chatbot, I'm being interviewed by software, bye-bye, I don't want to work for you. Hell no, if that's how you treat your people. So look, guys, the job market, it just sucks. So the market's kind of trading sideways this morning, waiting for this data, doesn't really know where to go. I'll be honest with you, I don't see a lot of upside on this one particular data point. There's other things going on this morning that there is some upside to. But as far as this revision here, the market's expecting a pretty high number. The weakness of the labor market, stocks have already seen their benefit from that, right? You've got like a 99% certainty of a 25 basis point rate cut here, maybe a 1% possibility of a 50-point cut. So if we get a big negative number, say it's a million or a million point one, say it's even worse than the 800,000 people are expecting, it doesn't change the situation with the Federal Reserve. They're still probably going to cut. It doesn't make things any better in that department. So you're just left with the downside risk of an economy sliding further and further into recession. So I think really the risk on this data point is only to the downside. Maybe you get a little bit of a relief rally if the number comes in a little lower than that 800,000 expectation, but not too much. If the number comes in much lower than that 800,000 that's expected, well, then maybe that damages the prospects for a Fed rate cut. Maybe the market doesn't like that because the job market looks a little bit stronger. Maybe we don't need to cut as fast. So I really see the only risk here is to the downside on this one data point. We'll know in about an hour, guys. And of course, there's going to be all kinds of commentary and, of course, silly political posturing associated with this. You know, the president has fired the BLS head, replaced him with somebody from his circle. So people are going to say, oh, this is just statistical manipulation and Banana Republic stuff. The people on the right are going to say these were Biden's payroll numbers. They were never good as the economy was. And the financial press was in bed with the Democrats to make things look better than they were for the election. So, you know, there's going to be a lot of that noise. But at the end of the day, we're probably going to be left with a job market that is just not as strong as they've been telling us. Now, the other thing we got to talk about this morning is what's going on in these crypto treasury companies. All right, it's not funny anymore, guys. It's not cute. This is just getting nutty. Case in point, 8co, ticker symbol OCTO, OCTO. They rallied 3,000% yesterday. All right, not 30%, not 300%, 3,000%. Why? Because they raised $250,000 to buy WorldCoin, which I'm betting most of you watching this have probably never even heard of WorldCoin because it's a stupid shit coin that nobody buys, nobody cares. The only people who own WorldCoin are some people in like freaking Jakarta or Indonesia who stuck their face in this orb because Sam Altman promised them 35 cents worth of stimmies if they do it and then went and sold the biometric data on the black market. There's no reason to own WorldCoin. There's no reason to buy WorldCoin. But all right, let's have this stupid mental exercise. Why would you buy a crypto treasury company? And this started with MicroStrategy. And because MicroStrategy took it to such obscene proportions, now you got Tom Lee's doing it with Ethereum and people are doing it with Doge. And now they're doing it with every stupid altcoin under the sun. But why would you buy a crypto holding company? These holding companies trade at a huge premium to the value of the crypto assets they hold. So you're overpaying for those crypto assets when you buy these companies. All they do is they borrow money and they buy crypto with it. That's it. There is nothing fancy about that. It's a glorified margin account on freaking Robinhood with a CEO and a CFO and expensive executive pay and all this other stupid administrative burden along with it. Why buy a crypto treasury company? Why not just buy an ETF? With an ETF, you get the same thing, right? You're basically just, you're bidding on a stock that represents an ownership in a crypto company, in a crypto asset. It's the same freaking thing, except the ETFs trade at a slightly lower premium than these treasury companies do. And even then, why even buy a crypto ETF? Why not just buy the crypto? Well, the answer typically is because either the rules won't let you buy that crypto or you're too lazy to learn how it works and you don't want to buy a wallet and figure out how it works and you don't understand setting up an exchange. You'd rather just trade an ETF or you'd rather just trade a treasury company. At the end of the day, guys, this is just stupid, lazy gambling. So stop telling yourself you're an investor. Just go to freaking 7-Eleven and buy a scratch-off and good luck. That's all this is. And look, crypto winter's right around the corner, guys. These treasury companies are going to go down in such spectacular fashion when crypto winter sets in, which, in my opinion, is only a few weeks away. And it very well may be these crypto treasury companies that end up causing crypto winter. 8co rallying 3,000% yesterday. Guys, it's worth like $8.5 billion now because they're buying $250 million worth of WorldCoin, which is a crypto that has no use case. Nothing. It's a worthless cryptocurrency. All right. Good luck, guys. Congratulations if you made money on OCTO yesterday. Good for you. Try to hold on to it. Good luck keeping it. That's all I can tell you. Also, news going on this morning. Nebius, ticker NBIS. Now, this is an interesting name. This is basically like CoreWeave's slightly less fraudy cousin. All right, Nebius, I shouldn't say slightly. They are CoreWeave's much less fraudy cousin. CoreWeave is a neocloud or a hyperscaler. They're one of these other companies that has propped up to build data centers in order to rent them to big tech. They cut a big deal with Microsoft this morning, $17.4 billion through 2031. And Nebius stock is ripping on this news, up over 50% this morning. There's some interesting take on that in MarketWatch this morning. We've got analysts at MarketWatch are saying the reason why these big neocloud deals are getting cut now is because big tech doesn't want to front the capital anymore. They don't want to pay to build out the data centers. Why not just sign non-binding resolutions with these neocloud companies, and then they could take that deal and go out and borrow money against their own assets to go do that. And then, of course, I get the feeling that that debt, ultimately, it's probably bound for your 401k. See also earlier rants on private credit and private equity. Let's see. A lot of geopolitical news this morning. The prime minister in France, he's out of there over attempts to cut spending. The prime minister in Japan, he's out of there over worries about inflation. They're the same thing, guys. The reason why we have so much inflation is because we have so much runaway government spending that is enabled by central bank money printing. It's the same thing. And like all these prime ministers are resigning and we're having snap elections and confidence votes. Just cut spending. Quit beating around the bush. We got to cut spending. We got to stop borrowing. That's the only way we're going to fix the inflation problem. But hey, I just throw them out there. You guys do what you want with them. Also, the trade deal between the U.S. and South Korea is on the ropes. That big bust with Hyundai late last week and the 300 illegal South Koreans that were working on the building of that factory in Georgia, that didn't help things. Now we've got disagreements over $350 billion worth of investments that could threaten the nascent revitalization of U.S. shipbuilding. We got problems with de minimis shipments are already starting to have problems. That is the less than $800 packages that used to sail right through customs without having to pay tariffs. But we don't do that anymore. Now you have to pay tariffs on that and people are getting the bills and they're rather shocked by it. Be careful if you're ordering something online, guys. You are now subject to those tariffs and it's going to delay your package, or you may end up getting a phone call saying you owe $100 worth of tariffs on this thing you ordered. Might just be easier to order from U.S., but I digress. We've got lumber futures are flashing a warning and what that could mean for the housing market. We've got Mercuria Energy is trying to corner the aluminum market. This is an interesting story going on in Malaysia. And of course, sorry guys, my allergy's still getting me. And of course, we have to talk about this story going on in Hong Kong, a $1.3 billion loan for Shimeo, one of the bankrupt developers in China. That loan is being rolled over because they tried to sell it, but they couldn't sell it. And as always, we're going to end the show with warnings about private credit and private equity, because you'll never guess who they were trying to sell it to. But then again, actually, you probably will be able to guess who they were trying to sell it to. Guys, be careful. Know what you own and watch out for the dumping of toxic assets into your 401ks and IRAs. We've got a lot to talk about. Once again, how about we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the market this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm for you new guys so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with us melonheads, because we do this one every day. And right now, stocks are kind of quiet here, guys. The S&P is higher by about 5 points, 0.07% to the upside, waiting on that big revision to the payrolls numbers. The Dow is doing a little bit better, up about 30 points or 0.07% higher this morning. And the NASDAQ is also higher by a little bit more, 0.1% or 24 points higher. We got a rally in the semiconductors and some of the AI names off of that Microsoft Nebius deal this morning. That is probably propelling the NASDAQ a little bit higher here. Looking over at the U.S. dollar, we've got the Dixie is up by 6 basis points, 97.51. Very little move in the dollar this morning. And looking over at the bond market, we've got yields are a little bit higher, ever so slightly. A 30-year treasury, 4.711. That's higher by 2 points and change. The 10-year is at 4.056, higher by 1 point and change. The 2-year is up almost 1.5 points at 3.509. And the 1 month is at 4.157. That's down almost 2 points this morning. Looking over at the commodities board, things are a little quieter in the metal space here. We've got gold is up a little bit. Spot gold, $3,653. That's up by $17.64. Another all-time high for gold, higher by 0.5%. And also, guys, check out that front month gold futures there, the December gold futures, $36.94. We're almost pushing $3,700 for gold. Another all-time high. Just a reminder, guys, gold is not supposed to make an all-time high every day, and that is not a good sign for the economy, no matter how good it might be for Jack or my fellow gold bugs out there. Again, I'm not really sure I want to live in a world of $5,000 gold, but I'm pretty sure that's coming. Silver, meanwhile, not doing as well this morning. 41.16 for spot silver. That's down by about 19 cents or 0.5% lower. Silver has had a heck of a run too. Not surprised to see that taking a breather here. We've got copper is essentially unchanged this morning. Platinum is down about 0.2%. Palladium is down 0.6%. And crude oil is higher by about 1.5%, $63.22 for October WTI futures. Looking over at Bitcoin, having a pretty good morning here, but still kind of grinding its way higher after the sell-off of the last few weeks, 112,672 for Bitcoin. That's up by about $600 this morning as priced on Coinbase. But it's not really Bitcoin that is in the news. We got to talk about Aiko or Octo or Orb, whatever you want to call it. This silly WorldCoin treasury company. Frenzied as ever, this Dan Ives-led WorldCoin treasury purchase is only the latest example of market madness. And I think madness is the right word here, guys. This is utter insanity, what happened with this company yesterday. It's insanity, stupidity, ignorance, frenzy, euphoria. Pick what you will, guys. It's not real. The 3,000% surge in Aiko holdings on the purchase of digital assets that can be acquired independently is just the latest example of what one analyst calls market madness. Aiko stock surged 3,000% to $45.08, up from $1.45 on Friday, after a $250 million investment from a group of investors to purchase a Sam Altman cryptocurrency called WorldCoin. Dan Ives, the colorful tech analyst at Wedbush Securities, was named chairman of the company. BitMine, chaired by Tom Lee, the fund strategist and permabull, agreed to buy a $20 million stake in Aiko at $1.46 a share. The market's animal spirits are more than alive and well. They are as frenzied as ever, said Michael Rourke, chief strategist at Jones Trading. He pointed out that the company's only material assets are $250 million in sponsor financing. Yet the stock ended the day with an $8.5 billion market cap. Understand, guys, if you were to liquidate this company tomorrow, sell it for its bones, you got $250 million, but the stock is trading at $8.5 billion. It's likely, he added, that the company will soon launch an at-the-market offering to build up its multiple of net asset value, or MNAV, which is basically just the silly premium that investors pay above the value of the assets. Aiko wasn't the only digital asset treasury conversion on Monday. Forward Industry shares jumped 59% to $25.96 after a $1.65 billion to buy Solana. So we got Solana treasury companies too. Might as well get a Fartcoin treasury co going while we're at it. In both Aiko and Forward Industry's case, the sponsors are now holding some 98% of the company, which means they could rug pull at any time. The public's willingness to pay a premium, and in some cases, wild premiums, to have an equity wrapper around a digital asset they can purchase individually remains amazing. It's not the word I'd use. I'd call it stupid. He called it an example of extreme greed. And guys, look at this. This is Aiko yesterday. It rallied 2,982%. It's up another 8.7% this morning, but again, that 8.7%, that's of the adjusted price. So, you know, it's actually a few hundred percent more of what it was up yesterday. This stock is up over 3,000% off of raising $250 million to buy WorldCoin. And now they're trading. Now it's worth a few $1 billion. Okay, good luck. Good luck, guys. This is not going to end well for people. But you know, again, if you made money, congratulations. But a fool and his money will soon find themselves parted. Also going on this morning, big move in this name. Nebius stock is surging. Why Microsoft just inked a deal with the cloud company? This is CoreWeave's, like I said, their less fraudy cousin, Nebius here. Nebius Group signed a major deal with Microsoft as artificial intelligence demand keeps booming. The NeoCloud company, which made a name for itself in the technology world by serving as an alternative to the big hyperscalers, is now teaming up with one of them through an infrastructure agreement worth at least $17.4 billion through 2031. If Microsoft opts for additional services or capacity, the value could go up to $19.4 billion. DA Davidson analyst Alex Platt views the arrangement, announced after the close of trading on Monday, as a validation moment for Nebius, a Netherlands-based company which is seeing its stock surge about 50% in Tuesday's pre-market action. Microsoft previously acknowledged company constraints in its Azure cloud business. The company has been unable to meet all of its demand for AI cloud services because it can't get sufficient supply of NVIDIA graphics processing units quickly enough. That's actually not true. Microsoft CEO said earlier this year that he is not chip constrained, that he's power constrained. So it's a little bit of an inaccuracy from MarketWatch there. But after talking with Nebius, Platt believes that the nature of this deal is to primarily bring capacity to Microsoft Azure as opposed to serving overflow capacity for OpenAI-related workloads. Sounds like Microsoft would rather rent it than build it. For Microsoft, the deal lets the company expand its cloud capacity without incurring additional capital expenditures. We believe the trend is clear. CapEx is out and off-balance sheet arrangements with external debt are the way forward. Another DA Davidson analyst, Gil Loria, wrote on Monday. Nebius said in a release on Monday that it will finance its own data center CapEx through a combination of cash flow coming from the deal and the issuance of debt against the contract in the near term at terms enhanced by the credit quality of Microsoft. So guys, look, I think what's going on here, I think Gil Loria and Alex Platt are right. I think Microsoft doesn't want to shell out the billions of dollars to build these data centers themselves anymore, not when they can just sign an agreement and then let a company like CoreWeave or a company like Nebius go out and borrow the money using that agreement as some kind of collateral. And then they take all the risk and they're not burning their own shareholders' capital anymore. And of course, what's going to happen to that debt? Well, I don't know this for a fact, but I suspect a lot of that debt is going to end up securitized or sold as private assets and dumped into 401ks so that when these data centers go bankrupt, it will be you who takes the hit in your retirement account. Just another reminder, guys, be careful and know what you own. But look at Nebius stock ripping this morning up 54%, trading at $98.43, up over 34 bucks ahead of the opening bell. It caps off a pretty wild year for Nebius, up over 350% year to date so far. Meanwhile, France's political crisis deepens as another PM is axed. Here's what happens next. France was thrown into further political chaos this week by the ousting of yet another prime minister after continued budget deadlock. Prime Minister Francois Bayrou and his centrist minority government lost a confidence vote on Monday with a total of 364 lawmakers voting against the government and only 194 in favor. The latest government collapse was widely expected after Bayrou failed to win support from political rivals for 2026 budget plans aimed at reducing the country's yawning budget deficit amounting to 5.8% of GDP. So France tried to cut spending and, well, everybody threw a fit. Macron will now choose a new prime minister. That will be the fifth prime minister in less than 2 years, or create a technocratic government, but both motions are likely to face the same political opposition to budgetary cuts. The president could also call another snap parliamentary election, but that too could deliver an inconclusive result or give even more seats to the far-right National Rally or the far-left France Unbowed Party. So problems in France, disagreements over spending cuts, and we've got problems in Japan as well. This was actually over the weekend. Japan's Prime Minister Ishiba resigns after bruising election losses. So that's two prime ministers are out in as many days. Japanese Prime Minister Shigeru Ishiba resigned on Sunday, ushering in a potentially lengthy period of policy uncertainty at a shaky moment for the world's fourth largest economy. Having just ironed out final details of a trade deal with the United States to lower President Donald Trump's punishing tariffs, Ishiba told a press conference that he must take responsibility for a series of bruising election losses. Since coming to power less than a year ago, the unlikely premier has overseen his ruling coalition lose its majorities in elections for both houses of parliament amid voting anger over rising living costs. In other words, inflation causing problems in Japan as well. He instructed his Liberal Democratic Party, which has ruled Japan for almost all of the post-war period, to hold an emergency leadership race, adding he would continue his duties until his successor was elected. Now, the timing of this is kind of interesting because I think Ishiba stuck around just long enough to get the trade deal done with President Trump because they knew the trade deal was going to be unpopular because Japan knew they didn't have any leverage in a trade negotiation with the United States. And so when you've already got a prime minister who's wildly unpopular and about to resign, you might as well blame him for a lousy trade deal. And then when he resigns, the new guy can come in with a clean slate. So Japan is losing prime ministers over inflation. France is losing prime ministers over spending cuts. They're the same problem, just on two different sides of the world. And we've got problems between the U.S. and South Korea also. U.S. and South Korea in a deadlock over $350 billion investment fund. The U.S. and South Korea are in a deadlock over details of a $350 billion investment fund the two countries agreed to as part of a broader trade deal, with a top Seoul official warning that even the shipbuilding partnership is at risk if they fail to narrow the differences. Speaking at a forum on Tuesday, Kim Yong-byung, director of national policy at South Korea's presidential office, said Seoul has been emphasizing to U.S. officials that it cannot accept the same terms as Japan's $550 billion investment pledge finalized this week, citing the disparity in the size of the two economies and potential repercussions on the foreign exchange market. So it looks like South Korea maybe doesn't have the $350 billion that the U.S. expects them to invest. The $350 billion fund is a central pillar of the trade deal that preserved a 15% tariff on imports from South Korea, but the two countries remain divided over how the fund will operate. Kim said last month that the investment pledge would be structured mainly as loan guarantees rather than direct capital injections. The deadlock comes amid other points of tension between the two nations, the detention of hundreds of South Koreans and a U.S. immigration raid on Hyundai, a battery plant in the state of Georgia, threatens to make Korean companies more reluctant to invest in the U.S., even as they are encouraged to do so as part of the trade deal. Look, feel free to invest in the U.S. Just don't import illegal labor when to build factories. The whole point of those factories in the U.S. is to create jobs for Americans, not to create jobs for illegal immigrants. But I digress. Look, guys, the big takeaway from this one, though, is shipbuilding. The South Koreans are the second biggest shipbuilders in the world behind the Chinese. And of course, if we do end up in some kind of a naval conflict with the Chinese have a 300-to-1 shipbuilding advantage over the United States, which means we better remember how to build boats real fast. And to do that, we are going to need both money and expertise from the South Koreans, which is what this $350 billion is supposed to do. Now that is on the ropes here, complicated by this immigration raid in Georgia. Meanwhile, we've got new tariff rules bring maximum chaos as surprise charges hit consumers. Be careful if you're ordering something online, guys. Make sure it's shipping from the States, and if it's not, expect to pay a tariff if you're importing from other countries. The bills are sudden and jarring. $1,400 for a computer part from Germany, $620 for an aluminum case from Sweden, and $1,041 for handbags from Spain. Some U.S. shoppers say they are being hit with surprise charges from international shipping carriers as the exemption on import duties for items under $800 expires as part of President Trump's tariff push. That's leading to some frustration and confusion as shoppers and shippers both try to navigate a new reality for anybody ordering goods from abroad. It's maximum chaos, said Nick Baker, co-lead of trade and customs practice at Kroll, a firm that advises freight carriers. On August 29th, for the first time in nearly a century, small dollar items coming into the U.S., also called de minimis goods, began facing import duties. That means even small personal orders now face sizable tariffs placed on U.S. trading partners. While a recent ruling by the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit found many of Trump's duties unconstitutional, they remain in effect while Trump appeals the case to the Supreme Court. And look, guys, this de minimis exemption, it's causing a big problem. A lot of countries just decided they don't know what to do, and they're not going to allow any de minimis shipments to the U.S. because of this tariff worry. Just be careful when you're ordering stuff online, guys. That's the takeaway from this. It's messy, and we still haven't figured out how this is going to work. This whole trade war thing, it's all new to us. And yes, that does affect the things that you order online. Meanwhile, in a housing update, we got this one to keep an eye on. Lumber prices are flashing a warning sign for the U.S. economy. This one in the Wall Street Journal this morning. Falling lumber prices are sounding an alarm on Wall Street about potential problems on Main Street. Wood markets have been whipsaws of late by trade uncertainty and a deteriorating housing market. Futures have dropped 24% since hitting a three-year high at the beginning of August, and ended Monday at $526.50 per thousand board feet. The price drop might have been greater, but two of North America's biggest sawyers said last week that they would curtail output, slowing the decline. So we've got a little bit of lower prices causing supply destruction here. Crashing wood prices are troubling because they have been a reliable leading indicator of the direction of the housing market as well as broader economic activity. So you can add crashing lumber prices to the list of worries in the housing market. Take a look at this chart of lumber prices going back to pretty much the end of last year. All right. This is shown in, what is this? This is capital.com lumber prices. First of all, you had a lot of lumber was coming into the country ahead of the tariffs. People were buying up everything they could to bring lumber into the country because they were worried there would be tariffs on Canadian lumber. And then, of course, August 2nd hit Liberation Day and lumber prices crashed along with everything else. And then we had the taco trade when it looked like, okay, tariffs were on again. Now they were off again. Lumber prices rallied a little bit. That is right up until we found out, nope, things with the Canadians are not going so well. The tariffs are still on. And oh, now we have a weak job market and we have problems with consumer spending. And look at what happened. The home builders reported earnings and they sucked. And now lumber prices are crashing. It's been pretty volatile year for lumber prices here, guys. But right now, the warning signs in the housing market are piling up. And I'm not sure 25 basis points from the Federal Reserve is really going to do anything to stop that. As always, lumber knows. And another commodity story, this one's kind of interesting here. Aluminum holds gain as withdrawals from warehouses in Asia surge. Pay attention to this one. Aluminum, that's another one of those tariff stories, right? The U.S. put tariffs on aluminum from overseas to try to rebuild domestic smelting capacity. But this story, I didn't know about this company that's out there trying to corner the aluminum market. Aluminum held recent gains as requests to make withdrawals from London Metals Exchange warehouses in Asia surged for a second day. Prices fluctuated near $26.15 a ton in choppy trading after advancing 1% over the previous two sessions. Requests to load out almost 100,000 tons of aluminum from LME depots in Malaysia in just 2 days reduced the volume of stockpiles available to other buyers from a 14-month high. The LME aluminum market has been rocked this year as traders vied to control the exchange inventories, with Bloomberg reporting in June that Mercuria Energy Group had amassed more than 90% of available stocks and an unusually large position in the market. That move prompted the bourse to introduce new rules compelling traders with large futures positions to lend them back at capped rates, supplementing similar rules already governing inventory holdings. While stockpiles have risen in recent months, they remain historically low, and there have been ongoing concerns about supplies. So this is interesting, and this kind of reminds me a little bit of that mess that happened in the nickel trade not too long ago. You got one player here, this Mercuria Energy Group, taking out a huge position, 90% of inventory owned by one player. And then, of course, what does the London Metals Exchange do? They do the same thing they do every time. They change the rules and they require the longs to be willing to lend their metal to the shorts so that they can cover, basically sabotaging their own positions, which is what the London Metals Exchange does every time the trade goes against them. They change the rules. It's one of the reasons why people always say these markets are rigged. That's exactly what they did with the nickel, or was it zinc? I don't remember. It was one of those metals had a huge short squeeze and they changed the rules. They undid the trades. That's going on with aluminum now, this Mercuria Energy Group controlling almost all of the metal on the London Exchange. And last but not least, guys, in another case of be careful what's hiding in your 401k, check out this one from Bloomberg. Hong Kong housing woes spur $1.3 billion Shimeo loan rollover. Now, this isn't a story about what's hiding in your 401k. This is a story about what was almost hiding in your 401k. And even this garbage debt to Chinese developers is trying to find its way into your nest egg. Be careful, guys. A $10 billion Hong Kong dollar, that's about $1.3 billion U.S., loan tied to a luxury Hong Kong apartment complex has turned into a months-long saga, underscoring the widespread impact of the city's prolonged property slump. United Overseas Banking is extending the maturity of the loan, so we got more extend and pretend, backed by the Beacon Peak complex near the Kowloon Tong area, after attempts to offload the facility to private credit investors fell through, according to people familiar with the matter. So private credit was trying to buy the debt against these worthless buildings. The project, developed by defaulted Chinese builder Shimeo Group Holdings, only began selling in January, with just 17 out of 332 units sold in the first phase of development as of September 2nd. This is a big, empty building. Nobody wants to buy this crap. The Singapore-based lender had earlier reached out to private credit investors to sell the loan tied to the project, which is key to Shimeo's restructuring plans, Bloomberg reported in January. Although investors like Davidson Kempner Capital Management and Ares Management showed interest in buying the loan at a discount, UOB chose to roll over the facility by 3 years. Instead, said the people who asked not to be identified, the original borrowing was due in September 30th. So yeah, this is a worthless Hong Kong building built by a defunct Chinese developer, but it was American private credit institutions that were looking to buy the debt at a discount. Why were they looking to do that? Because they were going to buy it at a discount and then mark it right back up to face value and sell it to your 401k. That's what the plan was for this debt, guys. Even Chinese real estate developers could end up in your 401k if you're not careful. Shimeo's loan extension is another case of banks kicking the can down the road as Hong Kong property slump drags on. With no rebound in sight, lenders are forced to extend or amend developer loans to avoid booking losses. But it's not extend and amend, guys. It is extend and pretend very much. But again, it was American private asset managers that were looking to buy up this debt. And I'm sure they were looking to do it so they could turn a profit by selling it to you without you even knowing it. As always, guys, this private asset dump into 401ks is a big risk for the average person. It's happening behind our backs. This is the bailout happening. Know what you own. Open the prospectus and be careful what you own. That's all I can tell you guys. And I just want to say thank you very much to Mr. Sam, who's been a Melonhead for 5 months. Thank you, Sam. He says, big AI copyright ruling, Anthropic to pay $1.5 billion. You know, I saw that story, Sam. That's a good point. Anthropic just settled with the author of several thousand books. And all of these authors were suing Anthropic because Anthropic basically stole their life's work. They trained their AI data on their books, and then they're reproducing it for a profit. In other words, it's IP theft. But the interesting thing here is it looked like Anthropic was set to win the case. And then Anthropic went and decided, no, we'll pay $3,000 per book instead. Now, there was an article, I believe it was in the Wall Street Journal this morning, that said that was kind of like a scorched earth tactic of Anthropic trying to basically like burn their own cities as they retreat to try to screw over the competition, namely OpenAI, and maybe try to force them to have to pay for the copyrighted works that they're pillaging to train their large language models. It is a big deal. Anthropic, like OpenAI, has major cash burn problems. And now it's gotten even bigger with this $1.5 billion settlement. You know, look, the problems with AI are legion, guys. There's a lot of them. Number one, they're just not that smart. These AIs aren't nearly as smart as they tell people they are. It's built on a backbone of accounting fraud, this whole bubble. The companies are not profitable. The power grid cannot sustain them. And there's the other thing. They're stealing copyrighted works from authors, journalists, movie stars, even the likeness of people, even Scarlett Johansson's voice. They're just stealing it. So yeah, the problems in the AI bubble, they're not going away. And actually, this one just got a little worse for Anthropic. Thank you, Sam. Good tip, sir. Appreciate the super chat. And Grandpa, thank you for being a Melonhead for 18 months. He says, debt and spending is life to Keynesian economics. Yep. Keynesian economics, man. I mean, look, that's why all economists basically, you know, we get like 500 economists will sign a letter saying, oh my God, we have to do this thing. Otherwise, some problem will happen. The only thing we teach in school is Keynesian economics. And then we're like surprised when Keynesian economics dominates the way we operate our economies. And then we keep doing things wrong. The problems keep getting worse. We keep being forced to lower interest rates and print money to solve the problems of Keynesian economics. The solution to Keynesian economics is not more Keynesian economics. Maybe we give the Austrians a try just once. All right. Every time the Keynesians break something, they're like, we need to be even Keynesianer. You know, oh, Keynesian economics didn't go far enough. Let's try modern monetary theory. How about we just try, like, I don't know, not spending money we don't have, not printing money into existence to try to solve our problems at the expense of the average person. How about we try living within our means, right? We're expected to live within our means. The government expects people to live within their means. They expect people to give up their cars to save the climate, but they'll go ahead and just print trillions of dollars to fund wars all over the planet, right? Well, yeah, that's debt and spending. Absolutely. It is the lifeblood of Keynesian economics. I don't think that's going to change anytime soon, Grandpa. Alex L., thank you, sir. Says, feel better. Appreciate the good vibes. It's just allergies. I'm not sick. It's we had kind of a cold August out here, and well, nobody's got the sniffles. What can I say, guys? I apologize for that. Thank you, Alex, for the good vibes, sir. Lisa B., thank you for being a melonhead for 19 months. Says, BlackRock and Canada Pension poised to buy Minnesota Power. You know, I saw a similar story. We were talking about this on the Patreon Zoom call last week about Blackstone, not BlackRock, but Blackstone was trying to buy the biggest New Mexico power grid. What's the word I'm looking for? Utility, the biggest New Mexico utility. Private credit, private asset managers, private equity, they are looking to buy chunks of the power grid right now because they know that's where the price squeeze is going to be. All of these data centers that are being built right now, there is no plan to power them. They're all going to be powered by good intentions, which means the average person's power bill is going to skyrocket. And so you're seeing a lot of people are vying to buy chunks of public utilities. So the fact that BlackRock and the Canada Pension Fund are looking to buy in Minnesota now, I don't know specifically that Minnesota's like ground zero for data centers, but without reading specifically into this exact story, I'm willing to bet data centers is a huge part of this particular case, like it is with that story of Blackstone buying the TXMN Power, I think is what it's called, in New Mexico. Thank you, Lisa, for being a supporter of the channel for 19 months. Alex is back again. What's going on, Alex? He says, spend it before it becomes worthless. That is in reference to Von Mises' crack-up boom, where people rush to exit their currency before it loses its value. That's why inflation expectations are so dangerous. If people expect inflation to get worse, they can make it get worse with that expectation. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, which is why our boy Jay Powell over at the Fed is always worried about inflation expectations must remain well anchored at our near our 2% target. You know, he's got to, once people believe the 2% target is BS, which it is, it will be BS and inflation starts to run away. Earlier this year, we had some really big inflation expectation numbers came out of University of Michigan in some of their surveys. The New York Fed's inflation expectations never got that ridiculous. I think that was a little bit around the tariff hysteria. They have since come down, but they started to trend up again. So be careful of those. When those tariff price hikes hit, and they will, some tariff price hikes will filter through to the consumers. If they are too big and they start to concern people and people start to think transitory all over again, the inflation's coming back, they may rush to exit their fiat currency for anything and everything they can. And well, that makes the currency worthless. Thank you, Alex, for supporting the channel, sir. And SWFL Bach, thank you, sir, for being a melonhead for 2 months. He says, what about our pensions? Do we have any control? No, not really. Nope. You got your pension fund managers, and if you're in a union, your union representatives who you choose to represent you in negotiations with them, but you don't really have a lot of control. I mean, you can always call up your pension fund and whoever your representative is and start asking them questions. You could make them uncomfortable. And if enough people do that, maybe those union officials or maybe those pension fund managers will realize, hey, you know, people are privy to this and they're starting to wonder, why are we putting our money in this? Maybe we should stop doing that. But unfortunately, no, pension is an unfunded obligation from your employer and it's run by somebody that isn't you and you don't have much control over it, unfortunately. Wish I had better news for you, SWFL Buck. That is another reason why I like the shiny. No fund managers for my shiny. And I just want to say thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Again, I appreciate you guys putting up with my allergies. I apologize for that. Don't forget the like button and the subscribe button on the way out for the algorithm, should you feel so inclined. Thank you guys for the super chats for supporting the channel, as well as you magnanimous Melonheads on Patreon and YouTube. Thank you guys so much. Links down below, should that be your shtick. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys, everybody. Till next time, live small and dream big.